Coach P's perspective.
Serve God, work hard, family coaching, play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch, got your back, Coach 96. We do got your back. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey fam and friends, hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. This is your host, Coach Chad Parks, and thank you for joining me today. I'm a college All-American wrestler, coach, and the author of the best-selling book, Game Changing Moves. This background has allowed me to train elite athletes, coaches, and high performers from all walks of life. So if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I got you right here on Coach P's Perspective. Let's go. If today's message motivates you, inspires you, moves you into action, then please share this with somebody via social media, text, whatever works for you. You could also give us a rating or review on iTunes. And last but not least, be sure to check out my book, Game Changing Moves, Life Lessons from the Locker Room and Beyond. You can pick it up right now on Amazon or go to my publisher, crosstrainingpublishing.com. All right, y'all, let's jump into today's episode. Hey, before we get started, I want to tell you about my favorite nutrition program, Champion Athletes. As an athlete, whether at the middle school, high school, collegiate, or professional level, you have special nutritional needs, and these vary depending on your sport and energy requirements. Nutrition and ideal body composition play an essential role in achieving your performance goals and maximizing your success. At Champion Athletes, certified experts in sports nutrition develop individualized plans for the student, amateur, and professional athlete. Their sports nutrition programs will optimize your diet and nutrition so that you can achieve your ideal body composition and maximize your performance. Here's what I love. Each program is tailored to meet your specific needs through a comprehensive assessment, continuous reevaluation, and one-on-one coaching. So whether you're just starting out, maybe you're an amateur athlete, or you have elite status, the Champion Athlete Sports Nutrition Programs will help you reach your maximum potential. Programs are available nationwide. And for us, if you are a listener of Coach P's Perspective, you'll receive a $50 discount for the initial program if you use the code COACHP. Their website is champions-athletes.com. So be sure to check out the website. You can also look at their Instagram page, which is at championathletes. I'll have those links in the show notes. Go check out my friends at Champion Athletes to get your nutrition right, to reach your maximum potential and performance. I am pumped. They have one of the best wrestlers in the United States, the world, is a phenomenal coach. So Frank Molinaro, let me go through just a little bit of his background because his bio is enormous. And we'll just hit a few of these, some highlights. But Frank was on our U.S. Olympic team, took fifth in the Olympics. The world champion, Pan Am champion, U.S. world team trials runner-up. He's a NCAA champion for Penn State, four-time All-American, two-time Big Ten champion, and then has coached at several high-level places as well, Rutgers, Penn State, Virginia Tech, Arizona State. And then we were just talking briefly because I'm from Oklahoma, and he was training down in Oklahoma for a while. So, Frank, man, thanks for being on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Well, let's just start here, man. So, I mean, a lot of wrestling people listen to this podcast, but we also have businessmen. We have people outside of the wrestling world as well. So let's just kind of start with your background, where you grew up, some of the sports you played, and then how you got into wrestling.
Sure. Yeah, I grew up in South Jersey. I've got one older brother. He graduated from the Naval Academy. He was 4 years ahead of me. He's currently XO commanding officer in the Navy right now. I started wrestling when I was 4 years old. My parents put me in every sport. I did football, Pop Warner football, Little League, basically just tried everything. And up to high school, once I got to high school, then I kind of decided, you know, this is where I need to really kind of have a single-minded focus. And I stopped doing the other sports and started wrestling in national tournaments year-round when I wasn't in season. And the rest is history. But true story, when I was in kindergarten, I was sitting at my desk. I still remember this. And the teacher handed us a yearbook and it said, in 20 years, I want to be a blank. And I was like, all right, I don't want to be a doctor. I don't want to be in school my whole life. You know, I want to be in like pro sports. And I really liked football, but I knew I wasn't going to be big enough for football already, even at that age. So I was like, man, I want to be an Olympic wrestler. So I put in my yearbook, got a picture of it. In 25 years, I want to be an Olympic wrestler. So I think, you know, I should have said Olympic champ, but you never know. You know, dream big when you're a kid because, you know, you never know what can happen.
Yeah, no, that's huge. That's awesome, man. I'm glad you have that too. So you're able to go and show it to your kids one of these days.
That's right.
Yep. So, all right. So, you know, you grow up wrestling and then we'll kind of fast forward. And Jersey has incredible wrestling. You know, those of us in the wrestling community know the Midwest has very good wrestling. But, man, we go out to Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York. I mean, out there east, it's tough. It's about as good as it gets. So, but how did you end up at Penn State? What was the connection there?
Sure. I'd always go to this really, really hard wrestling camp in the summer. It was called the Jeff Jordan State Champ Camp. And I went every single summer and it was in the middle of nowhere in Ohio. And we just ran and wrestled all day. And basically college coaches would come out there. So I'd, you know, get to wrestle 2-hour live goes in front of Penn State, Wisconsin, Ohio State, and all these like schools that were friends with Jeff Jordan. He was the guy that ran the camp. So one time I was out there and they had their best guys in there and I was just wrestling really well that night. I had a good energy and just a good day. After practice, the Penn State coach, Matt Derlin, came up to me and just kind of introduced himself, asked me if I was interested in, you know, going into the Big Ten. And it was a perfect fit at the time because I really wanted to be in the Big Ten Conference at that time. And I really liked that it was 4.5 hours from my house so my parents could see me compete. And it was also in one of the hardest wrestling states. So I knew it was going to be very competitive when I was there.
Yeah. Tell me about that, you know, because as a college wrestler, I mean, I always say like people get broke or they get better. You know, you walk in the room and it doesn't really matter what division. College wrestling is just tough, right? And everybody in there is a hammer. Maybe you were like the big stud in your high school room and all of a sudden there's 6 people in your weight class that are just as good as you or better. You know, what was it like walking in that Penn State room?
Man, it was humbling. And to be completely honest, you know, I was really, really looking forward to it. I remember my senior year of high school, you know, not to sound cocky, but I just felt like I was supposed to win the states. I was going to win the states. And, you know, I just wanted to go back to where I was kind of the little fish in the big pond and make my name and level up and transform and, you know, just go back to solving problems and improving my wrestling. But when I first got there, I was in the room with Jake Strayer, Bubba Jenkins. I mean, these guys at the time were all killers. Garrett Scott, you know, he was very, very number one recruit from Pennsylvania. And I remember the first like 2 weeks, I couldn't even finish a takedown. I was like, man, I don't know why I ever thought I was good at wrestling in the first place, but you know, it was fun. And I just remember leveling up and there was this one practice. It was like a 30-minute go and this guy was killing me. And then he just got so tired, you know, and I just started going off and got like 4 or 5 takedowns in a row, broke them. And, you know, I just loved the feeling of that. It was good.
Yeah.
Gave me confidence after getting beat for 3 months straight.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think, you know, when somebody goes from middle school to high school, there's that transition. And then from high school to college, it's even more drastic, but there's that kind of point where people realize like, dang, okay, I can do this, you know?
Right.
I think this is something I could do. So now Penn State has just been rolling, right? Kel's got it just absolutely going. It's incredible. And you're at Arizona State now, and we'll talk about that later. You guys are moving in that direction. But what were some of the things? And it's crazy, too, because we have a friend we're talking about him, John. I was talking to him about it. You've literally been in the room as an athlete and as a coach with some of the best coaches and wrestlers in the nation. So you got to see a little bit of all of it, but what were some of the things that you guys did at Penn State that just separated you that allowed, and let me back up and say this, all the top schools are getting the best recruits. Somehow
right.
Penn State continues to produce really well and really high levels with those guys. And it seems to exceed a lot of other schools. What were some of the things that you guys did at Penn State?
I think some of the things that stood out to me, you know, being an athlete there and then being a coach there. So you get to see it from both sides, you know, you operate as an athlete, then you operate behind the closed doors. And the number one thing is the organization. You know, I think everything was carefully planned and everything had a purpose, you know, for what they were doing, the warm up. You know, they trained in a specific order and, you know, everything was about peak performance at the end of the year. So, you know, if you know the ending before the beginning, then you start there and you work backwards. So there was a lot of that. There was a lot of positive thinking too, and gratefulness, you know, and that was not always the approach that my coaches had. It was more beat you down, like a tyrant kind of coach. And I think it was good for me, but this was different. This was more about developing the mentality and developing the mind, you know, because at the end of the day, your mind is your greatest weapon, you know. And we spent, when I was there, we spent a lot more time, and maybe this is because they were building the culture in the beginning, but we spent way more time working on mindset stuff and life skills versus moves. You know, it's like, if I can motivate this kid and I can teach this kid to love to learn and be enthusiastic about learning, and I can teach him that wrestling's a craft and teach him that he's lucky he gets to do this, and teach a kid how to make gratitude a habit and how to, you know, control his thoughts and filter his thoughts, he'll figure out the wrestling moves on his own, you know. But that's where they spent a lot of time, was helping kids have the right perspective all the time, and also making people self-aware, making them understand that you are responsible for everything that you think, say, act, do, etc. You know, you're not responsible for every thought that pops in your head, but you're responsible for every thought that you give energy to and speak life to and, you know, live out on a perpetual basis. So that was kind of Kale's niche, was, you know, he was very good at the headspace and he was really good at the mentality and the mental training. And I think his staff and all the people that he had with him as well were very good at the planning process and making sure that everything had a specific purpose with intention, and then always improving. You know, that's one thing that we always do at Arizona State. You know, we're just in a perpetual state of improvement. We're never good enough. You know, we're always innovating. And I think that's what kind of keeps the hunger to go to practice. That's what kind of wakes you up out of bed to be the best in the world. Cause there could be one or two more things that you learn that put you over the edge. Maybe it's a, you never know. So we tried, that's kind of the main things, was the intention and planning, the mentality training. And yeah, it was good.
It has transformed. It's transformed wrestling in a really good way. So I grew up in Oklahoma. I grew up in the John Smith era and went to John Smith wrestling camps from the time I was 5 years old till I graduated. I shot nothing but low levels and high C's, right?
There you go.
Yeah. So I got into college, got bigger, stronger, started banging, kind of turned more into Iowa style. So I say that because at that time we kind of had John Smith, Oklahoma State style, slick wrestling, a lot of open stuff. And then we had Iowa style beat you up. And I still remember to this day, my college coach, like, pulled me aside after a match and being like, hey, you know, cause I was a little guy when I was in high school, and I put on a lot of muscle in college, and it's like, hey, how, you know, what weight do you wrestle? And I was like, oh, 149. And he was like, you know, you're not a 25 pounder. I was like, no. And he was like, in practice, you just beat the dog out of people. And then in matches, like, you won't even put your hands on. So I opened wrestling, and it was like the first time a coach gave me like the green light or like freedom to go be physical. So those were kind of the mentalities. And then all of a sudden Penn State comes along, and from the outside looking in, we're all like, man, what is going on? Like, these guys are having fun. They're scoring massive amounts of points. And it has really transformed wrestling to the point where now it's kind of like Penn State style, you know? Yeah. And has brought a lot of awareness to, you said, gratefulness, to gratitude. And I'm a mindset coach as well, but to the mindset space, adding that into what we do as coaches, being very intentional with that. And I think it has been an absolutely phenomenal transition for our sports. Now, in saying that, I'll tell you what, I've told a few people this story. So I'm at the U.S. Nationals, and one of my buddies was coaching, and I got to come sit. We're in Lincoln, and I got to come sit right down in front of the stage, and you were wrestling Zane. And so I walked down there. I'm like, all right, man, these two dudes I love to watch wrestle, they're about to bang. And I'm like right beside the mat, essentially. And it was like you could hear the hand fighting, like every single smack. It was excessively physical. I love it. But I'm like, it's funny because we think like, oh, Penn State guys are just slick and scoring all these points and pinning everybody. I'm like, no. They're still like Iowa style, beat the dog out of you while they're scoring a lot of points.
That's good.
Yeah. So it was fun for me, but as a coach, I really like what happened. And then now we see across the nation what I would say is a real positive movement in the sport of wrestling.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
A lot more people, you know, Ohio launched that campaign, Positive Infinity.
Yeah.
You know, that was all after, you know, the whole gratefulness, score points, have fun movement. Iowa hasn't changed yet. You know, they got a good system and method behind their madness, but you know, it's cool to see all the different styles. Cause you know, I've been around Lou Roselli and you know, he was really the meat and bones of the wrestling with the RTC when they started it up at Ohio State, and also all the success, Steber, Jaggers, all those guys, you know, he's running 700 workouts a year, probably in the wrestling room. And he was just dangerously consistent. You know, I thought I was insanely consistent until I met Roselli, you know, because this guy, you know, he wake up out of bed the same way, he have the same drink in his hand in the morning, but you know, he was very intentional too about what he was doing. He knew that if he continued to be this disciplined and continued to just not get weird about it and do the work, eventually good things would happen, you know. And his whole mentality was, if you know, when you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, you'll do something about it. You know, and that really kind of put a light bulb in my head, because I remember at the time I was so stressed out and, you know, I was tired and I was trying to cut so much weight to make the national team at 65 kilograms. And one day he's like, listen, you know, when you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, you'll do something about it, you know. And I took that advice to heart, you know, and I did something about it and I stopped being so tired and figured it out. But sometimes you need a coach like that. You know, you mentioned your high school coach. When I was in high school, I was like just coming out of my freshman year. I was not great, but I thought I'd be like top three my sophomore year. That was my goal. And he goes, what kind of crappy goal is that? Top three. He goes, if you're not training to be first, he's like, I don't know what the hell you're doing in this program. And I was like, man, I like that, you know, because it just gave me confidence. Like, he thinks I can get first. Hell, that's all I need. You know, he believes in me. It was enough power that I just took it and it exploded, you know, and I ran with it. But, and then I've had other coaches like Eric Guerrero. I spent a good bit of time with him, and he's more of your cerebral kind of creative, open-minded coach. You know, he likes to kind of test things and really craft a lot. You know, we did a lot of sparring and a lot of positional wrestling, and his mindset was unique as well. You know, he focused more on the tactical side, you know, and Mark Perry's a great coach. He's probably the best coach in the United States that trains the tactics. Cause I don't even think some schools train tactics, you know, use tactics. What's that? We train, I won't say exactly how much, but we train a certain percentage all year round of tactics, shooting off the whistle, end of the periods, just what happens in between the wrestling moves, the wrestling in between the wrestling. When you start to get to that place and that visualization and figuring out that stuff, it's like, now you're just completely in the zone and in the wrestling and in the match. And there's just so many different kind of approaches. And then obviously Zeke Jones, you know, when it comes to his wrestling, it's like, he's the guy that created the RTC model. He created the entire RTC model because he was the national team coach and he was having trouble getting all over the country and getting everyone to come to Colorado Springs for 6.5 weeks. That's not enough time to train. It's like what the Russians have, all different republics. So then he creates RTCs, but he's a mastermind when it comes to the details. We've only had two wrestlers in the history that got voted the most technical wrestler in the world, and he's one of them, you know. And when it comes to the wrestling moves, he's an encyclopedia. When it comes to the science, he can tell you exactly what percentage you're going to have diminishing returns on your weight cut if you don't reach this percentage, hydrate it at this point in time. You know, he can tell you every single detail. And our team philosophy is simple and easy to remember and effective. Attitude plus technique equals scoring. We talk about it all the time. You know, it sounds overly simple, but it's more complex. But my kid's got it hanging in his room. We scored the number one and number two points at the NCAA tournament. McGee, 133 pounder. He wrestled like 8 or 9 matches, something crazy, all the way to fourth place, had a bunch of major decisions. He scored the number one points in the country. And number two was Ja'Cory Teamer. He wrestled all the way back to fourth place.
you know, and that's Zeke's philosophy. He doesn't get weird about it. He doesn't get reactive. He's really good at the energy management part of it. And he's very, very good at being all knowing and all prepared in terms of what's going to happen out there. So everyone's got a little different approach. And those guys, all those guys I just mentioned are all highly successful, you know. And I guess one more I would like to mention would be Bruce Burnett, you know, because he's kind of like, I consider him one of the goats of wrestling, because I feel like, you know, his innovation kind of inspired so many other coaches, but he was insanely organized about everything. You know, when you say like, don't leave any stone unturned, I'm talking about, he'll tell me what color the arena is. He'll tell me the match order. He'll tell me where to warm up. He'll tell me how much time I'll have in between matches, after matches, before you walk out from the holding area. And, you know, for an athlete like myself, who's a little bit OCD, I like to be on schedule. You know, I like to be in a schedule, in a box, and just keep it mindless on game day. So I don't know. I've been real blessed to have all those coaches to kind of, you know, extract what I thought was really important and kind of put it into my own game. And when I first started competing, not to go off track, but when I first started competing, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to compete as long as I can, because I know I want to be a coach. I always wanted to coach, but I'm going to compete as long as I can, you know. And I took some risks and went out there and got around other coaches and went to other clubs. You know, I could have probably just stayed in one place and made one other move, but I made a bunch of different other moves and gained a lot of experience that now I can reflect back on in my coaching career. And I think it makes me more dynamic. And I also think that it all started from just having that constant improvement mindset from that I took from Kale and the open-mindedness, and then applied it to the rest of my journey.
Yeah. I mean, having the variety of coaches, having, you know, a variety of perspectives, right? The name of this show is Coach P's Perspective. And because I want to go in and get other people's perspective to be able to add to mine,
you know,
be able to open those, be able to open those doors. We only know what we know. We don't know what we don't know. Those type of things. I want to go back real quick, because I don't want to skip over it. When you're talking about tactics, I absolutely love that. Andy Andrews, one of my favorite authors ever. And Andy Andrews has worked with Alabama football team for years. He's worked with the Pentagon, just a wide variety of people. But he's the, I think, the first person I heard really talk about that. He said, and he used football as his example. So everybody at the high level, they're all running certain offenses. They're all giving a motivational speech before the game, halftime. They're all practicing fairly similar. And he was like, it's what happens in between the plays, right? So you got an 8-second play, and then you're going to have a little bit of time, then another 8-second play, then a little bit of time. What are you doing in between? So it's those tactics, those things, like you said, that people don't really think about that can change the game. And whenever everyone's kind of competing on the same level, those little details make a huge difference. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. And there's a lot of mental warfare in there too, with the tactics. You know, it's like, I can get somebody really tired by pulling on their neck for 6 minutes, you know, but there's other ways I can get them really tired, you know, by just using mental warfare, maybe beating them back to the center, you know, maybe walking really slow back to the center and acting like I'm exhausted, you know. But I always thought it was really interesting, the Russian style and the European style. So I always studied the Russians, the best ones, the ones that were winning medals. And just, I could tell, you know, there was intention and intent behind some of the things that they were doing. And, you know, they were tricking people and setting traps. And it was fun to see, you know, and I think we got some guys like that too in America now. But I feel like a big part of that Russian style is very tactical. And a lot of it is based on strategy, not on getting you tired. You know, my style is not to get you tired. My style, you know, is probably more cerebral. I just want to stay in really good position. You know, I'm always calculating when I'm going to attack and that kind of stuff. And, you know, focusing on all defense and waiting for them to kind of make a mistake. You know, my offense is usually a byproduct of being on defense. But then I see people who are beasts, like Kyle Snyder. You know, he just goes out there and he doesn't stop, you know, and he's an incredible wrestler. He's got 2 Olympic medals, a gold medal. So I think it all depends on, you know, your body type. And I think it depends on your coaches and kind of, you know, what kind of wrestler you want to create yourself to and design yourself to be too.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely. All right. So you were talking about a number of great coaches that you've been in contact with and got to learn from. So you as a coach, and I think this is really cool. I know my college coach said one time, he said, I wish that every athlete could take a year off and coach and then come back and wrestle because they would be a better wrestler.
That would make them better.
Yeah. So whenever you are at the Olympic level, right, and you're wrestling internationally and you're getting to coach and getting to wrestle, what kind of improvements did that make for you personally as a wrestler?
Well, I know that when I made the Olympic team, I was on staff at Penn State. You know, I was like training at Madison Square Garden in between sessions. And that was the best year I ever had in wrestling. Matter of fact, the best years I had in wrestling, I was also coaching, you know, and so I probably wouldn't recommend that to anyone. You know, don't chase two rabbits, pick one, you know, and then blah, blah. But it really just kind of made me more open-minded to other people, you know, how other people were struggling with their problems and their circumstances, and, you know, and to see how other people solve their problems. And then, you know, just always solving other people's problems. You know, you learn so much from people, not necessarily a specific wrestler, people in general, you know. And when you're a coach, a huge part of being a coach is cultivating that relationship, right? Building their trust, learning their language, learning how to meet their emotional needs, you know, learning how to make them feel good and filling in the blanks and helping them connect the dots. So there's a lot of thinking that goes behind it and a lot of planning. And, you know, when you're an athlete, sometimes you don't really have to do that. You show up and me and you, hey, do this, do that. You'll be great. Just buy in, blah, blah, blah. But as a coach, I think, you know, you do a lot more thinking too.
Yeah. So Tony Dungy is one of my favorite coaches ever. And he has a book called The Mentor Leader. And I know whenever I read that book, it gave me freedom as a coach. So a lot of people only coach how they were coached. Now that's good. And you take the great things you learn from other coaches and utilize that. But if people are trying to use a different personality than their own, right? Maybe you're not a yeller. Coach Dungy's not a yeller, but your high school football coach was a yeller. So you're always trying to yell as a coach. Well, you know, you're imitating them. That's not your style. So you've had all these great coaches. Who are you as a coach? What kind of coach are you?
I like to kind of lead by example, I guess, you know, just being extremely consistent with my character and my convictions, you know. And I always communicate to the kids, you know, the things that are most important to me: work, toughness, and gratitude, you know. And I talk about it all the time because, you know, that's kind of everything in my life filters around those things, you know. And as a wrestler, I think it's really important, you know, you have to do the work, you know. Hard work works. It's corny, but it's true. And I think people try to get too cute about it, but you have to be dangerously consistent in order to be the best. And one mantra that I would always tell myself in college and kind of became the theme of our team for a couple of years when I was at Penn State, and they still say it there. And it's gotta want it every day. You know, because when I lost the Nationals my junior year, I was in a state of panic every single day because I had one more season to win the Nationals, and I was 8-5 second. And my junior year, I got humiliated, terrible, embarrassing match. You know, I just underperformed. I was overthinking. A lot of things went wrong. So the next year, my philosophy was you got to want it every day. You know, it's like there's a million reasons why it might not happen. My senior year, I could get hurt. I could get injured. But that was not what I focused on. I just kept telling myself over and over, you got to want it every day. You know, and then my friends would even tell me I'd get a little soft in the sprints and they'd be like, you got to want it. And I would just go hard, you know. And I was at Nationals and Sky took me down off the whistle and cement jobbed me. And I had not given up a point in a month of wrestling. I was like OW at Big Tens. I was just riding off into the sweet abyss for this title. And this guy came out and he was a savage, you know, from Oregon State, poked me in the eye, took me down, like reversed me from bottom and almost pinned me. And I remember going out of bounds and I just felt like the whole tournament was swirling around me and it was slipping away. And then in that exact moment, like I was panicked. I didn't know what to do. And it's just, you got to want it. And I just snapped right back into it and just smashed them the rest of the match. So a big part of it, you know, is the work and being dangerously consistent. And then, as you know, a big part of it is the mindset, you know, because when you're 6 months out of competition, it's really, to me, it's not too mental. I'm more focused on the physical part, 6 months out of condition. I'm trying to condition my body So these skills are second nature. I'm trying to condition my body. So every time the guy reaches his left hand in my head, I'm going to shoot a high crouch. Even if I don't even tell myself, I'm going to do it involuntarily. As I start moving closer, I've got to make sure that I've got the right headspace. You know, I've got to make sure that I've got a mental routine, that I'm living in the right state of mind. And I say that because if you want to compete with gratitude and you want to compete lighthearted with a clear mind, then you have to live in that state of mind on a regular basis. Because in order, if I live kind of all over the place and then all of a sudden on competition day, I want to be grateful and everything, that's not my default. So, you know, I spent a lot of time as I got closer and closer and closer to the NCAA tournament, you know, I was more focused on paying attention to my thoughts and, you know, starting to work on my concentration and be more present. And when I'm one day before the tournament, there's nothing I can do physical that's going to make me greater for the tournament. So at that point in time, you know, I was focused on my tactics and technique, and I knew that there was nothing else I needed to do to get better. I had everything that I already needed. The only thing I needed to do was just turn the machine off and trust my instincts and just compete with a clear mind and a light heart, and don't try to go out there and white knuckle my way through it and hold it all together. And it took a hell of a lot of practice to get to that point where I could accept the vulnerability before the match and still be grateful about it. I had to reframe the way I thought about it, because when I really started thinking about it and trying to figure it out and solve this problem, you know, this anxiousness before I competed, I started just telling myself, like, I love feeling vulnerable. You know, anytime I was in class and a teacher picked on someone to do something, I just raised my hand and do it because it made me feel uncomfortable. And I was like, it's a good thing. It's going to make me grow. You know, this is the place I want to be, where all the pressure's on, it's all on the line, and you have a chance to go out there and do it. You know, that's what you're training for, to be in those positions. You know, and I just wanted to trust myself my senior year that no matter what happened, I would be able to have the mindset to get through it. And, you know, God bless my coaches and my teammates and everything for kind of pushing me. But had I not trained my mentality and my mind and just focused on all physical stuff, I mean, I would have been toast, because I tore my MCL my second match and things got flipped upside down. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got that mentality and you got that mind. And when it's the night before and you're in your hotel room, you're 100% in your head. You have to go out there and do it. So you want to make sure that you figure everything out in advance, so when you get to the day before, you know, this mind is ready to fight and to the death.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely huge. You know, Navy SEALs, they say you don't fall back to your level of desire. You fall back to your level of training, you know, and that's not just physical.
That's good.
Yeah. So, you know, for us, I mean, I always feel like if it's worth teaching, it's worth practicing. And that goes for the mental game as well. So if you haven't practiced it and then the hay's already in the barn, like you said, it's the day before, not much else is going to happen. But if we practice and practice and practice, then we get in the situation physically and mentally, we're going to be able to have a default setting, like you said, and go back to that. So I also made me kind of happy. You said gratefulness, hard work, and toughness. So one of our team mottos is GET. We say we get to do this, but gratitude, effort, toughness, GET.
Are you serious? That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That's great.
Almost the exact same thing. So I feel like maybe we're on the right road a little bit.
Yeah. We're on the same frequency. It's good.
Yep. So, okay. So you know what made you a great athlete. And then as a coach, you know, you're creating great athletes in your minds. Like, what are some of the things that, you know, if there's a wrestler listening to this right now or another coach listening to this, what are a few of the things? I know a lot goes into this and you've already said a bunch of them, man, the stuff you're giving us is phenomenal. I'm going to go back and listen to it.
No problem. I love this.
But what are some of the things that athletes or people should be doing to become their best on a daily basis, right? And I wrote it down, being dangerously consistent. What are some of the things they should be doing?
I think you have to learn how to compartmentalize your day, you know, and really kind of sit back the night before and plan out specific tasks and then execute and be intentional. And when you're doing those tasks, I think you have to do things, you know, with a single-minded focus. For example, you know, when I come into wrestling practice, I'm not worried about my weight cut later. I'm not worried about my second workout, what I have to do at the end of the week. I'm not worried about, you know, the Friday-Sunday duel. I'm just completely present, you know, in the present moment, looking at coach, looking at his mouth when he's talking, you know, just passionate, engaged. you know, and I think you really have to have great focus, you know, because those are some things that you can control. You can control what you focus on. And a lot of people focus on what they don't want to happen. We talk about this all the time with our guys, you know, and I'll say it until they're sick of hearing it. You know, don't focus on what you don't want to happen. Focus on what you want to happen. Maybe a better way of saying it would be, do you use your imagination to make your life greater, or do you use your imagination to make your life worse and bring fear into it and worry? You know, so we talk about thought control, you know, and there's some really good videos out there that I could, you know, maybe send you after this, but that's one thing that kids can start by managing their minds. You know, we talked about work, toughness, and gratefulness. Well, let's talk about the toughness part of it. You have to learn how to manage your mind. You have to learn how to manage your thoughts. You have to learn how to manage your emotions. And the emotions aren't really that important, but the thoughts are important, because the thoughts that I think on a perpetual basis, you know, they start to create ruts, you know, and I've been in situations in my life where I've created brain ruts that just thoughts that I repeated over and over again. And whether I believed them or not, my mind believed them and programmed them and started to make them happen and bring them closer. And you know, you're a magnet. So the thoughts that you're, the story that you're telling yourself every day, I would say just pay attention to it. You know, make it a great story. And even if you have to fake it until you make it a story that is so great that if it actually happens, it would be worth living, you know, versus kind of living in the past or, you know, living in the what ifs. I was a what if person for a long time. So another piece of advice is, if somebody is a what if person, then just flip the script. When you catch yourself thinking negative what ifs, worst case scenarios, don't put energy to those. Flip the script and say, well, what if I do win the Nationals? What would I feel like at the end on St. Patrick's Day if I walked out of the tournament with a national championship, you know, trophy in my hand? What would it do to my life? What would my coaching career look like? How could I be a better, you know, athlete at the end of this journey, blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, I forget about that stinking thinking and I'm on the right track, you know, but the point of it all is you have to control your thoughts. And I tell my guys, I pick three things to filter my thoughts through: God, family, and gold. And it's not gold medals. You know, the medals don't mean crap. It's a gold standard that I do everything with, you know, just that passion, enthusiasm. But I have these three filters. You know, so when I catch myself ruminating on things that don't matter, you know, because again, we have to pay attention to what we pay attention to. So I catch myself ruminating about blah, blah, blah. Well, it doesn't filter through one of those three things. So I don't spend time setting my hooks and putting energy into things that don't go through those filters. So you got to have good filters. You got to control your thoughts. Me and you talked about this before. You have to make gratitude a habit. You know, I think, if I can say the single-handed greatest thing that we did as a team last year at Arizona State was we made gratitude a habit. And when we were walking away with a trophy at the tournament and, you know, crap hit the fan, session 3B, we lose every match we were supposed to lose. We were supposed to have three All-Americans and like a finalist after that round, or a semifinalist, and he was winning 5-0 and tore his hamstring, but everybody was devastated. We thought we just blew the tournament away. Everybody, no one had anything to say. We're like, let's wait 2 hours, process it. We'll come back. We'll get here 30 minutes extra before the tournament starts, before we warm up, and we're going to figure this shit out and see what we're going to do. And we were all like, nobody even talked to each other. Everyone went off and did their own thing. And we came back there. We talked about gratitude every day. Zeke talked about it. Lee talked about it. I talked about it. All the kids on our team talked about it. And we were like, you know what, this is crappy and it was painful, but now we have a tremendous opportunity in front of us to come back and show these people that ASU is not no party school. We're tougher than hell. You know, we're grateful that we have this opportunity to show people how tough we are, that, oh, you think we're quitters and we're not going to go to the WrestleBacks? We're grateful we have this opportunity, because now we can not only show you that we can wrestle back, we can beat NC State and Michigan in the WrestleBacks. And it just was that perspective. Anything that you add gratitude to is going to make it exponentially easier. You know, we say you can either focus on the good or the bad in any situation. You know, you have the choice. And sometimes, you know, I'm a little wimp and I focus on the bad in the situation, but I always know that the remedy to my fear and the remedy to my failure and the remedy to my worry, it's always, you know, gratefulness. I just add gratefulness to it. Like, okay, you're worried about winning an NCAA championship. How about the kid that's worried about getting a meal today? You know, like you get to wake up and chase championships, Frank. You get an opportunity to wrestle in front of 12,000 people in St. Louis on St. Patrick's Day. What are you afraid of? You know, and it's that kind of thinking that set my wrestling apart and sets me apart as a father and a coach and a husband is just continuously making sure that I make gratitude a habit, control my thoughts, and, you know, can go on for days, but I would say visualization. We just had a mindset training with the team the other day. And the three things that we talked about that day, you know, cause we wanted to kind of hit the ground running. We spent a lot of time doing mental training at ASU, but it was visualization, you know, like we talked about using your imagination to make your life greater. We talked about positive self-talk. You know, people need to be careful how they talk to themselves. And easy way that I remember it is say what you mean what you say, and watch what you say, you know, because heck, I could be thinking a thought, but once I speak that thought, I'm not good enough. You know, I don't think I'm ready. Now I've just put energy to that thought, you know, so people have to learn, you know, how to talk to themselves better. And I'll even say this. Sometimes I'm at the tournament and no matter how hard I try, I can't talk myself into it. I can't talk myself into feeling good about it. And when that happens, that's where I just say, screw it. And I don't try to talk myself into it. I just try to be more mindless and more present and kind of disconnect from my thoughts. And I see these thoughts in my mind, but they're just passing through. I'm not connecting to them. I'm constantly redirecting back to the present moment and pulling myself into the present moment because, you know, you don't have to believe your thoughts all the time too. You know, when I'm getting bad feedback, when there's a bad feedback loop in my head before my match, I just recognize it. Okay, this has happened to us multiple times. Instead of blowing the match and blowing the tournament, you know, this isn't true. I don't got to believe this, you know? So there's just endless ways and techniques of concentration and focusing techniques, but learn how to manage your mind, learn how to use your imagination to make your life greater and make gratitude a habit. I think if you can do those three things effectively, you'll see tremendous gains and you'll level up in all areas of your life.
All right, man, you're coaching us up. Dude, I'm about to go work out after this. For real.
I get fired up about it.
Yeah.
It's helped me a lot in my wrestling, in my life. You know, everybody can work hard. Everybody in this country works hard and everybody can work hard, but it's that mental side of it. You know, if you can conquer that, and even just get close reaching some form of mastery in your mind, I think it'll make a huge difference, you know, when you're out there wrestling and you're under that pressure and you're in those situations, you know, you'll have a strong, you know, fortress in your head.
Move on to the next thing. And everybody listen, please go back and take notes. I'm going to, so don't leave the best ideas just to your brain because they'll run right through there. So go back and write it down. So, all right. What are you, you know, you, your nickname, the Gorilla Hulk. I mean, you're a muscled up monster, right? So what are some of your daily success habits, non-negotiables? And these could be physically, mentally, spiritually. You know, you wake up in the morning and you do X, Y, Z. What are the things that you do on a daily basis?
I have a 30-minute routine from the second I get out of bed, wake up, go downstairs, make coffee, come back upstairs, go in the shower, pray in the shower, get out of the shower. And then I do the hardest possible thing right away. So even before I go to our workouts at ASU, I go to Lifetime Fitness, you know, sometimes 5 a.m, 6 a.m, depending on what we have. And I just go ham. You know, I want to do the hardest possible thing right in the beginning of the day. And I try to really front load all of my highest productivity from, you know, the second I wake up till about like 6 p.m., I'm in my highest productivity, you know, and somewhere in the middle there, I take a little rest, you know, because I try to do a great effort, rest, and then a great effort, and then a rest, and then repeat. I think nutrition's a big one. I really cut corners for a long time, with my nutrition. You know, I let my diet yo-yo. I did extreme weight cuts. I didn't really value kind of making good health habits. And some of my health habits now, I drink a gallon plus of water every single day. I make all of my guys carry around a gallon. You know, I put two scoops of amino acids in there, you know, third party tested, approved, that kind of stuff, blah, blah. A lemon and a lime. I drink that every single day. I like doing intermittent fasting. So usually like 6 days a week, I'll do like a 15 to 18 hour fast. What else? You know, I do take healthy supplements and that kind of stuff. Sleep's a big thing. There's not many things that you can do for recovery besides sleep, quality sleep, you know? So I have a sleep, I've got different kind of sleep patterns and sleeping techniques to kind of give myself better rest and kind of things I do before bed to get myself ready to get good rest. But rest is key too. I mean, hydration, rest, and nutrition, what you're fueling your body, you know, you really want to put the most nutrient dense, highest quality calories when you're in the heart of your training. Another thing, when I wanted to get to the next level, I started training twice a day, sometimes even three times a day. That's probably not smart, but the point is, you know, if you really want to get shit done, then it's going to take at least 11 workouts a week. I tell my guys when they come in there, I was talking to this freshman the other day and he's worked out all summer and he's made tremendous progress because he's dangerously consistent. He's very enthusiastic about learning and open-minded, and he's soaking all of this, these new people around him and in this new environment around him. And he gives great effort in everything that he does. And I said, well, you've had about 30 workouts and you're training 11 times a week right now in the summer. I said, if you continue to train 11 times a week for the entire year, you're going to probably have about 560 to 650 workouts completed. And if you bring this kind of intensity and this kind of focus and this kind of enthusiasm for learning, where the hell are you going to be after 650 workouts? You know, and if you do that for another 650 and another 650, and all of a sudden you're wrestling for 10 years and you're on the senior circuit and you're 27 years old, it might actually happen for you. You might, you know, for some of us, they're ready to run through the door right now. You know, they're 20 years old. They've been putting in the work since they were like 4 years old. But I think that you can't get weird about the training. You know, you have to be consistent. It's boring, you know, but I really believe that in order to be the best, you have to just continuously keep that routine. But routine's big. You know, I try to tell the kids all the time, some of them don't like routines. You know, but the problem is it's very easy when I get off my routine to get distracted or get bored or kind of lose sight of my goal for a minute. But, you know, when you want to be the best too, let's say you have a goal next year and your goal is to be the state champ in Kansas. You know, you have to keep that goal so tight to your chest. I wake up with that goal. I go to bed with that goal. Some people might say this is obsessive, but you know, I love it. I love to do it. No one's forcing me to do it, right? I want to do it. I got to want it every day. I want it every single day, but people will try to steal this goal from you. People will try to fight this goal away from you. You just have to keep it dangerously close all the time and keep it at the forefront of your mind day in and day out. I think this is important for people because what it's done for me is, you know, I like to process a lot of things all the time. And sometimes I can overdo it and overthink, or so you add anxiousness and worry and future-based problems, and all of a sudden, you know, you're ruminating all day in your head. So when I learned how to meditate, when I learned how to make my mind still, you know, I apply that to the same scenario when I'm in the worst case scenario. I can just bring my mind back to stillness and create space and give my mind a place to rest. But I don't think I would be able to do that had I not done meditation for, you know, 15 years. You know, I was doing it every day when I was training. I'd work out twice a day and like clockwork, right after I'd eat lunch, you know, I'd be a little tired. I'd lay down and do my meditation, you know, and I just kind of do like 20 minutes and then I come back, productivity, get ready for that next workout, explode. And I think it really helped me manage my mind. So meditation's good. Drink a gallon of water, make good, healthy eating habits. Some of the things that I really try to stay away from with my eating is sugar. I mean, I like sugar. I love sugar, but I try to minimize the sugar intake. I try to really stick to high protein diet, high vegetable diet. I eat carbs, but I try to be more strategic about when I eat the carbs. You know, I'll try to eat them in the beginning of the day, and I try to eat good carbs, plant-based carbs, black beans, you know, or I really like berries, any kind of berries, low sugar. I don't eat any bread. I eat at certain times of the day because I feel like it helps me be more intentional about what I'm eating. You know, if I know I'm not eating till 11:30 and I'm starving at 10, I'm already kind of thinking about what I'm going to eat, you know, and I'm thinking about, okay, I want energy for the next workout. So I'm not eating for pleasure. You know, I'm eating for fuel most of the time. I do eat for pleasure too, but when you're a high level athlete, like these college and high school kids, you know, I think that everything matters. Every little thing matters. And one of my favorite stories that I bring up, tell my kids, I tell everyone, you plant two trees side by side, and these trees are planted in the same soil with the same seeds, okay? But one of the trees only gets 75% of the sunlight. So after about 5 years, you can barely tell any difference. This is getting 100% of the sunlight. This is getting 75% of the sunlight. After 10 years, you start seeing a small difference. 20 years, you can see a pretty big difference. You come back to these trees at the end of your life, 60 years later, this one has grown exponentially taller. It reached its full potential. It reached its full life. It's still thriving. It has all the branches on them. And this one slowly begins to die and wither, and the branches fall off. The leaves fall off. It gets stunted. It doesn't reach its full potential. So there's your wrestling career in a nutshell. Do the little things. If I would be critical about myself, I'd say the 25% that I was skimming on was my nutrition and my mentality with my mindset. But once I started really making all the little things matter and focusing on those details, that last 25%, and I was doing 100% of the things right, well, man, I had no success for 10 years on the senior circuit until almost the end of my career, at the end of my rope, you know. But it was a byproduct of doing the little things right day in and day out and not getting weird about it, because eventually you'll see growth. Eventually you'll see a big difference. If you got a kid, 4 or 5 year old, 2 kids, and one of them's doing 75% of the things right, one of them's doing 100%. Well, I want to see this kid when, you know, he's a senior in college and they wrestle again, because I believe that it'll make a difference. If you're doing the right things 100% of the time and you really think the little things matter, you'll see tremendous gain, you know, in the latter end of your career.
That is huge. I mean, and for kids to, I'm going to send this to all my wrestlers too, by the way, this podcast. Yeah. I don't always send it to all my athletes, but this one's going out to all my athletes. So.
All right. I kind of went on a tangent there, but I was just trying to think everything I could for, you know, because everybody's different. Somebody might need to hear something else. Somebody might need to hear one thing, but like both of us, you know, we just like to help people, and, you know, we want to see people have those light bulbs go off and flip the switch in their head, you know, because that's what I love. I love transformation in my own life, and I love transformation in other people's life. It's like, that's what I'm obsessed with. I'm not obsessed with winning. I'm obsessed with leveling up and improving. It's just it's what I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
And you, absolutely. Obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right. Last question. I always like to end podcast interviews with this. You can answer all three, expound upon as much as you want, or you can choose one, all right? But I want you to tell me about a hero, a highlight, or a hardship in your life. Hero, highlight, hardship, or a little of each.
Sure. Well, I just saw this video yesterday with Tom Brady on ESPN, posted on Instagram, and he was talking about his hero, his dad. You know, my two biggest heroes, well, I'd say three, you know, my father, my grandfather, and I'd even say Bruce Burnett. You know, he's just his integrity as a human being and person, and his faithfulness in Christ, and how he was a coach, a father, a husband. He was just so good at all of these things, you know. And my grandfather, one thing I loved about him was, you know, he just had a heart for everybody. You know, he could love all people. He was very patient. You know, he was the head of his company, and he worked in this factory, and he'd go down and he'd go to one of the factory workers and say, hey, how's your son doing in soccer? You know, you make that traveling team. You know, so he just had a way of connecting with everybody and making everyone feel good. And he was a big encourager. And I just really kind of looked up to that and wanted to be some portion of that when I was older. My dad was obviously the same way as his father. And so that's that. My biggest hardship, I would say either, 2015. You know, I was just running so hot in terms of I just didn't have the right mentality. You know, I was so focused on myself that I think I became, I lost track. You know, I was, my ego was not in a good place. You know, I was just kind of all over the place and I was striving more and more and more, and it was making things worse and worse and worse. And it just came to a head in 2015, because I can say with confidence, almost every single year of my life, from 5 years old, 4 years old, there was some kind of milestone at the end of the year that gave me silver lining. Mm-hmm. And 2015 just flatlined me. You know, I was 1-2 at trials. It just, coming off a good year, I embarrassed myself. You know, I was thinking I could will everything into existence by just trying harder. I was like super frustrated. And I was at the end of my rope, and it was a crucible moment for me. And that's actually where I found Christ. If anyone's kind of listening to this, I found Christ at the end of my rope. You know, I found him in despair. I didn't find him at the top of the mountain. Matter of fact, there was more despair when I won nationals, because I thought in my head that winning nationals, I kept telling myself, man, the rest of my life is going to be easy. It's going to be made. And come on, we all know that's bull crap. You know, two, three days after winning the nationals, you know, maybe not that long, but a week or two after winning the nationals, that feeling wears off. And I realized, like, that's not going to fulfill me. What's next? Mm-hmm. And that's what success is. You know, success is you win this and then what's next? You win this and then what's next? Versus craft. You know, craft is, I can't believe I get to do this, but that's where I found God. I found God in despair. I found him at probably the worst, worst waiting period in my career on the journey was 2015. And man, I will say this with confidence, God has changed the trajectory of my entire life. You know, I think I was raised with good, faithful morals and all, but just like everybody else, I got lost along the way. I kind of, you know, got caught up in some of the wrong stuff. And long story short, you know, 2015 to now, my life has never been greater. And my life, like, things are not gruel anymore. Everything used to be a grind, right? But now it's a lot easier, you know, with that perspective and with God a part of the equation and number one in my life. And what was the last one? The highlight?
Highlight, yeah.
Highlight, 100% Big Ten finals, my senior year. It was just the greatest feeling I ever felt out in a tournament. I felt invincible, undefeatable. I just felt like I've never felt so good. I remember a week before, I was just like, I had this feeling a week before the tournament that it already happened. You know, it was like, I felt it. I almost cried. I was like thinking about winning the nationals. It felt like it already happened. And when I went into that tournament, it was, everything was effortless and fun and lighthearted. And my first match, I had a tough kid that I went into third period 2-1 with. I pinned him in the first period. I tech-falled the second kid and didn't give up a point. And then I tech balled a kid that I had two hard matches with, Dylan Ness. And we were in a tight team race. We were half a point behind. I tech balled a guy. I don't give up any points. It was just electric. You know, I remember like getting my second or third set of back points. And I, like, for a second, I felt disappointed because I just wanted that feeling to last forever when I was on the mat. And I stood up and I was just going crazy because I tech balled them. The crowd went crazy at Purdue. And, you know, we ended up winning in the last match of the tournament. Our heavyweight got a major decision and we won by half a point for the Big Ten title. So it was sick.
That feeling that you said, that's why, like, when it comes to all the mindset stuff, like, why can't we always just be there? Because whenever you get to go out and just have fun, and you're so physical, right? But when you have fun and you're wrestling lighthearted, like, it's literally like the best feeling in the world.
That's
and
right.
It's when you perform your best.
Yeah.
But then there's so many times we put all this pressure on ourselves. We have all these other things and we don't allow ourselves to go to that place, you know?
Right.
So yeah, I'm glad you said that.
I do that all the time too. Allow myself, you know, I say all these things, but I still do the, you know, the same stuff too. It's just, you know, we got to have grace on ourselves and keep practicing it. Like you said, yeah. Just practice. And when you're in practice, you know, create those scenarios in your head. You know, I play mental games with myself in practice. Like I feel myself waning at the end of the workout, you know, and I just catch myself in that moment. And I'm like, well, can you last a little bit longer? You know, and maybe that practice, I last a little bit longer. Maybe I do even worse, you know, but it's just, that's what it's all about. When you get to that place of, you know, when your mind wants to quit and everything feels like it's going 100 miles an hour and you just want to jump out of your skin and make it stop, you know, you have to just last a little bit longer. And that's what I love to do the hardest. And I don't say this to be cocky. I think it's just kind of in my nature. It's innate, but I just like to do the hardest possible thing all the time. You know, I want to feel the pain. I don't want to go into my workout and kind of go lukewarm and go through it and feel nothing. You know, for me, that would not be fun, you know, but that wasn't always the case. I had to really work hard at it. And I had some coaches that pushed me to the brink of my insanity. But, you know, when you begin to desensitize pain and change the way you look at pain, or even better yet, when you renounce pain as the number one thing, a part of your decisions, then you're limitless. You're limitless. I remember I saw this, like, this pastor, Pete Wilson, and he said that. He's like, renounce comfort as the number one priority in your life for 1 year. Suspend comfort as the number one priority in your life for 1 year and see what happens. By the end of that year, I literally had desensitized pain. You know, that lizard brain that I used to have that was super highly active all the time, assessing risk and all that, it slowly was desensitized. And when I would get to those breaking points, you know, it was more like a whisper versus a scream, you know, and it just came from changing the way I looked at pain. And my mother-in-law told me one time, I like this. I was telling her something about how hard this was going to be for me. And she was like, man, pain is pain. And I'm like, what do you mean? And she's like, pain is pain. You know, there's pain on one side of it and there's pain on the other side of it. For example, the pain to be an NCAA champion is extreme. You know, the pain that those guys went through in terms of the suffering and the belief and making it through the tournament and overcoming injuries and overcoming negative thinking and overcoming, you know, giving up and all these other things, there's a ton of pain. But there's also a ton of pain on underperforming and competing hesitant and not giving it your best shot and cutting corners and making excuses and complaining, you know. So on either side of it, there's pain. And my thought process now is, shit, if I'm going to have to go through the pain, you know, I'm going to go through the good stuff. You know, I'm going for my goals all out because pain is pain. It's all relative.
Love that, man. Yeah, I've heard it in other wording that life is hard. Choose your hard, right?
There you go.
Yeah, so choose your hard. Pain is pain, though, man. Simplify.
Pain is pain. You know, you gotta reframe the way you look at pain. You know, this pain is making my life greater. You know, I know that if I suffer now, down the road, eventually good things are coming. You know, they might not be here right away, but if I don't get weird about it, eventually good things are coming, you know, and that's kind of what keeps me fired up every day and to improve, you know, is just figuring out what could be that next thing that could set you apart as a wrestler or a coach or a program or a business leader or anything. You know, there could be one thing, that next thing could be the reason why you win the States next year, you know, so, you know, just stay after it every day.
All right, man. Well, this has been awesome. Coach, you are an absolute beast, not just as a wrestler, but as a human being and a beast in a good way. Where can we find you on social media and follow you?
Yeah, follow my Instagram. It's at Gorilla Hulk, GORILLA Hulk. And then my website's www.gorillahulk.com.
Okay, I'll put those things in the show notes so people can click on the link and follow. Again, thank you so much, Coach. I appreciate it. A lot of value and wisdom in this episode.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yep, you bet. So All right, everybody. This has been another episode of Coach P's Perspective. May God bless you, smile upon you, give you peace. Till next time, we're out. Hey there, friends. If you are a wrestler, jiu-jitsu athlete, grappler of any sort, MMA fighter, weightlifter, any of the above, I want you to go check out my friends at terragrappler.com. These are hands down the best wrestling shoes I've worn. I've been competing my entire life. I wear these to wrestle in. I wear these while I'm weightlifting. Pretty much any kind of training that I do, I'm rocking my Terra Grapplers. You can go to terragrappler.com, and if you use the code COACHCP10, you'll get $10 off of your order. The link is also in the show notes, so go check out my friends at terragrappler.com.
Podcast complete, now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins, tell Satan to stay up off of me. With a new step, CSL rep, pop, lock and rock. Coach P, who never stops.